This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca, iTunes, and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
In the aftermath of the death by suicide of Amanda Todd, an avalanche of news reports, opinion articles, and social media postings focused on harassment, bullying, violence, and the problems these behaviors pose for individuals and society. Media reports about Amanda Todd's experiences and state of mind acknowledged her anxiety, depression, and panic disorder. But her death was portrayed as being directly caused by the experience of being bullied. Diane Weber Biederman, a multi-faith hospital chaplain, wrote in the Toronto Star that Amanda was a textbook case study of depression. She had previously attempted suicide. She was a cutter. She cried all the time. She admitted to self-medicating with drugs and alcohol, a common response to mental illness, often the result of the pain, physical, emotional, and spiritual that comes with mental illness. Diane went further, asking why Amanda Todd was not placed in a psychiatric unit. Diane writes, she would have been safe there, she would have felt protected, she would have received all types of therapies in one place, cognitive, talk, medication, and spiritual issues. We're joined on the phone by Diane Weber Biederman.
Welcome to People First Radio, Diane.
Thank you for inviting me, Kevin.
Your article was called Amanda Todd's Death Was More About Mental Health Than Bullying. It was printed by the Toronto Star. Why did you write the article?
Kevin, first of all, there is no greater loss or a greater tragedy than burying a child. But Amanda's death to me is a tragedy on so many levels. I wrote the article because the media seemed just to be transfixed on the bullying as the cause of her death, rather than just one factor or one contributor, albeit it was a long-term and vicious stressor, but still one factor in her suicide. And I thought the media was too focused on her tormentors and not on her, this young girl who took her life. So I really did feel that we were avoiding the true cause of her death, which was, to me, an out-of-control mental illness. She had severe depression. There's no question it was triggered by years of abuse, but I still think we avoided talking about mental illness because for too many people, it's still considered a weakness or a character flaw, you know, something that you'll grow out of it. And that is the stigma of mental illness, that it still carries some kind of a shame and we don't want to acknowledge it.
You used the phrase while you wrote the following: I sometimes think we are avoiding the discussion by hiding behind bullying.
Mm-hmm.
Is this then, and you were referring to this a little earlier, is this a common approach for people when they're trying to talk about mental illness but are afraid to or unable to look for other things to talk about instead?
Yes. I from my own experiences with mental illness, I think you find all kinds of reasons for why you're doing what you're doing, and the last thing that you would ever consider is, you know, maybe I have a mental illness. And I don't know why that is, except I think it's shameful. We still think of it as shameful. I'd rather tell somebody I have cancer than tell someone I think I'm going into a depression. I think I have a mental illness.
Your article created its own stir in the public, and I've found quite a few things online in response to your article. One letter to the editor of the Toronto Star from Anthony Lungu says the following, and I'm quoting from his letter.
Mm-hmm.
Finding in mental illness an answer for why Amanda Todd would take her own life only serves to provide a partial excuse for her tormentors. In fact, it effectively causes her to share the blame for her suicide by suggesting that it was the result of an inability to respond in a normatively healthy, quote-unquote, manner to the bullying perpetrated against her. How would you respond to those comments?
Well, I think Anthony's letter sort of gives us an idea of how people think about mental illness and a misunderstanding. Again, he's suggesting that I'm blaming the victim, and as if her illness was the fault. You cannot blame Amanda. If you're going to blame anyone, I would blame the below-standard mental health care that was provided to her. When you're in the middle of a mental health crisis, you can't respond in a normal, healthy way because you're not normal and you're not healthy. And I think by Anthony referring to that, he is missing the point of mental illness. Does that make sense to you?
You also received, you mentioned to me on the phone, you received some emails from people, young people as well.
Yes.
What was the general tone of all that? What were people saying to you?
I received two emails in particular that were from young girls. I mean, they told me that they were of her age. And they were actually quite angry in their tone. They were angry with me for talking about Amanda's, which we all know she was diagnosed with a mental illness. I didn't diagnose her. We knew she had a mental illness. And they truly wanted to believe, and they wanted me to understand, that it was bullying that killed her. They wanted me to focus, and they want everyone to focus on bullying. And that brings me back to this idea of you're not understanding mental illness. And that if she had not had a mental illness, if she had not had so much fear and anxiety, and it was so bad that she was staying home, if she hadn't had that, if she'd been mentally well, she might have gone through this episode better. She would have suffered for bullying, because bullying is horrible. I was bullied as a kid. But because of her mental illness, she could not find the coping skills that she needed. And so I wanted these girls, and I wrote to them, and I wanted them to understand, bullying is horrible, but when you have a mental illness, you're not like a healthy person who can think of things to say or to do. Each time you get an email on the social media, each time someone says something to you, it drags you down further and further into the darkness and into helplessness. And that's what worries me, too, that we have young people watching Amanda dying, reading about it, and still saying, oh no, it's bullying. It's not her mental illness.
This is CHLY.ca, CHLY 101.7 FM. You're listening to People First Radio.
In the aftermath of the death by suicide of Amanda Todd, an avalanche of news reports, opinion articles, and social media postings focused on harassment, bullying, violence, and the problems these behaviors pose for individuals and society. Media reports about Amanda Todd's experiences and state of mind acknowledged her anxiety, depression, and panic disorder. But her death was portrayed as being directly caused by the experience of being bullied. Diane Weber Biederman, a multi-faith hospital chaplain, wrote in the Toronto Star that Amanda was a textbook case study of depression, and she questioned why Amanda wasn't receiving mental health care. We're joined on the phone by Diane Weber Biederman.
Diane, you had your own experience of mental illness. You mentioned it briefly earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that time and what you learned from that.
Well, I was a lot older. I was in my late 40s and early 50s. I was going through some rather nasty emotional and physical upheavals in my life. I was faced with sudden emergency surgery that was critical, and it almost destroyed my ability to hold on. All those stressors that happened at one time, it reached a point where I just went down into the deep, dark depression, and I at least had the sense to tell my doctor that I was feeling suicidal. I think what people who've never experienced this don't understand is that when you're in such a deep and dark place, you begin to see suicide as a very nice way out. You justify it. My family will be fine. My friends will be okay. I'm not going to be a burden. And then because your whole life is so out of control, events are taking charge of you, suicide becomes that one final act of control over your life. And for me, it was sort of like a peaceful thing. And it made perfectly good sense that it's time for me to leave. But when you're in that place, Kevin, you're not in a place where you have a choice. I don't think it's fair to say that people choose to kill themselves. You are so overwhelmed in such a dark place that your ability to choose life is gone. It's just not there. There is only one choice. And I really do believe that the moment anyone feels that suicide is their answer to whatever fear and anxiety or stressors or what's going on in their life, if they think suicide is the answer, then at that moment, they have to realize they're no longer mentally healthy. And that's what I learned, that the moment I started going down that path and really planning it, it hit me, and I'm grateful that it did, and it was probably because I had already gone through my chaplaincy, my medical, the training that goes with it. I knew that I was mentally ill. And that's what we have to have people realize. You're not well if you're thinking of ending your life.
In your article, you reference a new report on mental illness called Opening Eyes, Opening Minds. Tell us a bit about that report and why you mentioned it, why you felt it was important.
Because the report was telling us that we are still not providing enough care, enough health care. But I think that what we need to do is teach our society the signs and symptoms of mental illness in the same way and the same vigor that we teach things like signs and symptoms of stroke. There are more than 6 million people with mental illness, and many of them are kids. And that doesn't include all the people that are affected by a member of the family with mental illness. For instance, in my town, you can wait 8 months to see a psychiatrist. And yet, although there are other therapists around, cognitive and psychologists and social workers, here they're not covered by your health insurance. So you end up not going. And the longer you do not get your illness treated, it's like any other illness, the more severe it is, the greater it becomes, the more difficult it is to fix it. And I think what that report goes to is that we don't have enough help in people or even in facilities to help people with mental illness.
We'll have to leave it there. Thank you very much, Diane Weber-Biederman, for taking the time to join us. I look forward to speaking with you again in future.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
Diane Weber-Biederman received her clinical pastoral education at Toronto Hospital. Living with mental illness prompted Diane to write, produce, and narrate a 6-part radio series, The Many Voices of Mental Illness, which can be found on her website, themiddleground.ca.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.